We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
From Illinois Public Media, this is Focus on WILL Radio and online at will.illinois.edu. Good morning, I'm Celeste Quinn. The producer for the program is Harriet Williamson. Our technical director is Jason Croft. This morning, we opened the phone lines and the email message folder for questions about diet and nutrition. Our guest is licensed registered dietitian Susan Kundrat. At the suggestion of a listener last month, one of the topics we'll take up this time out is a plan for putting on weight and doing it with healthful foods. As always, Susan is happy to field whatever your questions on diet and nutrition may be. Listeners, I look forward to your phone calls and email messages. Here are the phone numbers. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free 800-222-9455, 800-222-9455. WILL. And the email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. Susan Kundrat is a sports and wellness nutritionist and president of Nutrition on the Move. She's an adjunct lecturer with the University of Illinois Food Science and Human Nutrition Department. She's the author of 101 Sports Nutrition Tips. She's also the sports dietitian for Illini Athletics and leads nutrition and cooking classes at the Activities and Recreation Center on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Again, questions, comments about diet and nutrition, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, toll-free, 800-222-9455, and the email will-talk@illinois.edu. Welcome back.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
So, at the suggestion of a listener, one of the topics we'll take up this morning is gaining weight healthfully. Mm-hmm. So, maybe what we could start out with is kind of an obvious but important question. How is underweight defined?
Well, underweight's defined many different ways. We can look at body mass index, and generally if we see body mass index under 20 or so, which is just a ratio of your height to weight. That's one way to look at being underweight. I tend to think of someone as underweight if they're really under their normal weight range, if that's a pretty healthy weight range. So it may be, for example, I'll have clients who maybe aren't at 18 or 19 or so in terms of their body mass index or that low, but they certainly are 10, 20, 30 pounds below where they normally are, and that's where they feel good and everything. So I think it can be relative too. I think if people look at whether they're underweight, it may be they've lost weight after a surgery or they've lost weight due to an illness and they just don't feel like their energy is good. Mm-hmm. So we have these clinical parameters, but I think it's probably more important when people just don't feel like themselves or feel like they've got enough weight on. Sometimes I'll see people who, for cases of health and body mass index, they're okay. But if they were to lose very much, they'd be in trouble. So it might be the case where you want to have a little bit on board so that if you do mm-hmm. get sick and lose, say, 10 pounds, that's not going to be a big hardship to you.
Yeah. I suspect some adolescents also, in a period of when they're shooting up,
sure,
might have a difficulty keeping the pounds on or keeping up mm-hmm. with their growing frame.
Yeah, exactly. I think, I do a lot of work, not exclusively, but a lot of work with athletes and young athletes too. And I think some of that is when people are very active, we want everybody to be active. Of course, we want people to exercise 30 to 60 minutes a day and be active. But for some kids, especially if they're in maybe two sports or they're exercising twice a day, they could be exercising 3 or 4 hours a day and burning 2,000 calories, where it's hard for them to even eat 2,000 calories mm-hmm. a day, and particularly with time constraints when you're that active with exercise. But just normal growth periods, I talk with a lot of parents who say, gosh, I'm feeding my kid everything I possibly could, and they just cannot for the life of them gain any weight, and because they're just burning so many calories and growing at such a high rate that it can be tricky.
Is an answer ever to in the case of someone who is getting that much exercise in to cut back on the exercise? I mean, if you're doing two sports, cut it down to one, or if you're doing three to two?
Sure. Sometimes that's a good adjunct, is to cut out particularly some of the extra cardiovascular work. So, for example, if you've got a kid who's in two sports at the same time, and say one, for example, is soccer and one is football or something, where they're doing a lot of running in both, maybe they don't need to do all the conditioning for one because they're already conditioned. So it might be that some of the extra running that can be negotiated with the coaches, where even 30 minutes less of extra running could be 300 or 400 or 500 calories fewer that the athlete is burning, and that can be a big help.
Yeah. So obviously, if you're in this position of needing to put on some weight, you want to add calories. So what might you add to the foods the individual is already eating?
Well, I'd say a couple things to think about if someone needs to gain weight. We, like you mentioned, you want to do it in a healthy way. You want to do it gradually. We do know that if someone gains 0.5 to 1 pound a week, that's really significant. That's a good amount. If you gain 2 or 3 or 4 pounds over a month, that's great. That's a level where you can easily be gaining muscle tissue by doing that. So it doesn't have to be real fast. But I would say if we look at a couple different principles, one would be looking at what I call eating opportunities. So, for example, I really try to encourage people to eat every 3 hours or so when they're trying to get stronger. So we might look at that first, and I would have clients or my athletes fill out a schedule of when they're eating during the day. Are there any spots in between where they can eat? So they don't necessarily have to feel like they have to eat more at a time to start out with, but maybe they just eat one or two more times during the day when they still could be hungry. So looking at the schedule is really helpful. And then also another easy way for people to start bumping up calories is to look at the liquids they're taking in, because we all need to stay hydrated anyway. So, for example, if someone's drinking mostly water with their meals, then we could change that to milk or soy milk or chocolate milk or juice or something like that. And maybe between meals, a good snack might include a cup of grape juice that could be 150 calories or more. So that's easy, because, again, it just maintains hydration. It's really no different on the stomach. People don't feel much different with that. But all of a sudden, by the end of the day, they've got 500, 600, 700 more calories because they're drinking something with calories. You get water from juice, from milk, from these things, too. You stay hydrated from those foods. Sometimes I'll have clients who drink a lot of coffee or a lot of tea, and we just start swapping out a little bit of that coffee and tea for caloric beverages, and boy, that really helps them. So I always try to kind of think about add a snack here and there when you've got time, add more liquids. Those would be the two things to do first, because those are pretty simple. And of course, anytime we make nutrition changes, we want them to be things that people can manage and that they can do on a daily basis. So those are two things that I find my clients can pretty much stick with. That's not too hard to do. And after that's taken care of, then we start looking at the composition of the meals and the snacks. So for many people, they maybe have learned to eat very healthy, and so they're eating a lot of fruits and vegetables, and they're eating pretty low fat and doing those things. But often they're missing out on some of these other calories by doing that. So I'll take a look and make sure if someone's eating big salads every lunch or things like that, we kind of drop down the size of that salad so we can put in some nuts or some seeds or something else that actually is what we call calorically dense.
Cheese or avocado.
Right, exactly. And particularly those good fats. Because I think in our country in particular, we hear so much about fat and so much about how fat is bad and how you've got to cut your fat. And I don't know how many times I see clients come to me with high cholesterol, and the only thing they've been told is to drop their fat down. So they've cut out peanut butter, and they've cut out eggs, and they've cut out any kind of oil, and they don't use any kind of margarine or butter or anything like that. In reality, a lot of these people don't have enough fat in their diet. And so fat is very calorically dense. So we would add things like a little more oil, or maybe regular Italian or oil and vinegar dressing as opposed to fat-free. Add a little bit of cheese, add yogurt, add again, things like even skim or 1% milk is a good source, has a little bit of fat in that 1%, and it's a helpful source of protein. And then really look at things if someone can handle nuts and seeds, because there's a lot of benefit even for cardiovascular risk reduction to add nuts and seeds. So even if you're watching your diet from a fat standpoint, we want those good fats. So maybe add sunflower seeds, pistachios, almonds, walnuts, some natural nut butters. And even in a handful of nuts, that's, you know, a little handful of nuts, 100, 150 calories. So, boy, that can add up fast. That's mm-hmm. why people are trying to lose weight.
Yeah.
Kind of have to watch the amount they're taking in. But that work can work to your advantage. So adding the fats might be the next thing we do because they're so dense in calories. You know, a teaspoon of most oils or margarine or something is 50 calories in just one teaspoon. And so that can add up fast if we start adding some of these olive oils and things like that.
Okay. What about sweets?
Well, I think there's always room. That's my bias. There's always room for sweets in the diet. And so sweets would be something where, you know, maybe you got a little bit more room for that. I wouldn't be the first thing I would add.
Yeah.
But I would say don't worry about dessert. Add a dessert if you don't have any medical reason not to, because that's an easy way to add some calories in there too. And then I would also look at saying, well, are you getting enough protein? We know we need protein to build lean tissue. And so for many people, they're eating a lot. I see this a lot in young kids who are active. They're eating a lot, but they're eating a lot of bread and pasta and rolls and things like that, and they're really not getting much protein. So we know we have to have the protein to build lean muscle too. So that'd be the next thing I would look at is what's the protein intake? Could we bump up protein a decent amount where if someone's getting a sandwich, is it just two little flimsy pieces of turkey on there, or could we add, you know, a third of an inch of turkey so you're really getting maybe 40 grams of protein? And look at that. Look at some different ways to add more beans and peas and some of these dense ways that you can get protein and other things as well.
Yeah. You mentioned no medical reason not to have a serving of cake or something.
Mm-hmm.
But that makes me think here that sometimes weight loss can be a sign that something's wrong.
Right.
So here maybe we should, with this caveat, we should say, you know, if you're worried about this, you might want to, you probably should see your physician.
Exactly. A lot of medical conditions might play out with changes in weight, whether it's weight gain or weight loss. But something that would come to mind right away would be something like diabetes. Because sometimes with people with diabetes, they tend to, their blood sugars run high, they tend to burn calories very quickly, and may see some significant weight loss very quickly. And so it may not be that we'd want them to necessarily add a lot of sweets or add just a lot of food, because that might throw it into a bigger problem. So that's a really good point. Anytime there's a major change, and we always say kind of a significant change in body weight is 10% of your body weight. So let's say if someone weighs 150 pounds and they lose 10 to 15 pounds of that 150.
When they're not trying.
When they're not trying, then that's significant.
Mm-hmm. Out of whack.
Sometimes we just don't eat well because we're also under a lot of stress, or we're not sleeping well. We tend to not eat as well. And so there might be other things going on medically that need to be addressed as well when you see any change in weight. And you might not even be aware, but there might be other things bothering you that your physician could kind of pinpoint and take a look at too.
Yeah. What is the role of exercise in terms of building that into a program of weight gain?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're an athlete, that's not an issue.
Right.
Maybe you're doing too much. But for somebody who's trying to put on some weight and hasn't been really active, how does that fit into this idea of mm-hmm. putting weight on safely, healthfully?
Well, we certainly want to put weight on in a way that it's what we'd call good weight, or another term might be functional weight, where you're putting weight on to the point where it's actually helping you. And there are certainly those people who their body fat's so low that they just need some body fat on their body. So it doesn't really, maybe it doesn't pertain to them as much. But in general, you want to be doing something with your muscles as you're trying to put the weight on, which can be tricky because for some people, again, they've lost weight because they've maybe been sick or been in the hospital, or they're not really in a position to necessarily do a lot of exercise. But if a person can, then we know that probably the best type of exercise to help strengthen the muscles is some type of weight-bearing exercise, some type of strength exercise. Even walking is a good start if someone can do it, because that it's weight-bearing on someone's body. But then looking at doing some type of easy weights or some type of core exercises where you're actually using your body as its own weight. And I think if a person is serious about needing to gain weight, it's definitely a good time to enlist the help of a personal trainer, or maybe they've got an injury too they're trying to come back from and they are working with a physical therapist, or finding someone who can help determine the best way to get that exercise program going so that it's, again, something they can maintain and it's something they're not injuring themselves with. But doing some type of strength-type work can be really helpful. And what I find, I work with a lot of people, too, who have a hard time gaining weight, maybe because psychologically it's difficult for them to think about putting on weight. Maybe it's disordered eating or some other things. And I think getting a solid exercise program is really helpful, because when you're gaining weight and you know you feel stronger, it's a lot easier to eat. So if you're feeling like your body can do more, you see that you're more muscular, you feel stronger, then psychologically it's a lot easier for us to continue to eat more and continue to stay on the nutrition schedule that we need to stay on. Whereas if we're just changing the eating and we don't feel better, we might even feel more bloated or things like that. It's quite a bit harder to keep the nutrition going.
Yeah, you might feel hungry.
Mm-hmm.
And that gets me to ask about, I would guess that you have seen in your practice people who had, for one reason or another, kind of a loss of appetite.
Mm-hmm.
How do you, in a disorder, you know, that's, you're going to handle that in one way.
Right, right.
But someone might have had a serious illness or had surgery, and they're just not feeling like doing it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, there are a few ways to look at that. Sometimes medications can be helpful, because there are different medications that really enhance your appetite that can be prescribed through your physician, and sometimes that's helpful.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things we try to do nutritionally is think about little bits at a time, right? So maybe someone doesn't feel very hungry, and I get this all the time from some of my clients to say, well, I can't really eat breakfast because I don't feel like it. I don't feel like getting up and having any kind of food. But maybe even just a scoop of peanut butter in the morning gets your body eating a little bit. You know, you get a little bit. And then an hour later, you could have a piece of toast. And maybe it's a small amount at a time where you don't feel like it's too much, but you get your body used to using food. And like you mentioned, sometimes once we get eating better, then we get hungrier. And the hunger doesn't always come right away, but maybe in a few weeks after you start eating well and getting more food in your system, then you start wanting the food, because your body now is kind of revved up. You've got the fuel, your body's got more energy, and then you can get to where you can eat more. I saw an athlete this morning and was talking with him, and he's trying really hard to get stronger, but it's been very difficult. And he said, well, I am hungrier, and I do have more energy in workouts, that I haven't really gained much yet, but just the fact that he's eating more now, he wants to eat more, and he's reminded to eat more because his body's telling him he's hungrier. And that's all a really good sign, because that's all very normal and healthy when you're trying to gradually, but start it really slowly. Don't feel like you have to eat big meals. Don't feel like, that's where the liquids can be helpful, because they don't really fill you up very much. But between meals, just starting with some liquids, even things like Ensure or Boost or something like that, where you're getting in just some fluids with some energy, can really help the body start using more.
This is Focus, and we're talking this morning with registered dietitian Susan Kundrat of Nutrition on the Move. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, you can join us this morning with questions, comments, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, toll-free 800-222-9455, and the email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. Let's take a call now from a listener in Champaign waiting for us on line one. Hello.
Yeah, hi. I wanted to ask you a few questions. One is, I have an eight-year-old daughter. She weighs like almost nothing, and she doesn't eat. How can we increase her weight? That's number one. Number two, I have a son who's 3 years old. He's on GJ tube and oxygen bag and everything. So we saw the doctor again for this month, and the doctor said to give him Pediasure, but he would not drink it for the life of us. He just would not drink it. She said if we drink Pediasure, then we don't have to have his feeding machine on as much, or we might be able to eliminate it altogether if he drinks like maybe 4 Pedi-Shores in 24 hours. And the last question is about myself. There's some reason that every couple of months I would go through a phase where I wouldn't eat anything on day's end. I lost like 70, 80 pounds in 6 to 8 months because I wouldn't eat anything for days. I'll hang up and I'll let you answer all those, okay?
Well, can you stay on the line maybe? Because I think maybe Susan might have a couple questions for you.
Right. Sure. Yeah, thank you for your question. Well, they're all a little bit different, you know, issues and concerns. Let me address your three-year-old son first. And I would definitely say, you know, anytime there's kind of medical-related concerns and if he's, you know, got the feedings and those kinds of things, you probably already are or have been working with a dietitian. But make sure that you do that too. Ask your physician to make sure you're working closely with a dietitian because there are all kinds of different products and things out there that can be mixed together or things you can add to some of these different products to make them taste better. And so I wouldn't give up on the Pediasure and I wouldn't give up on any one particular product until you're working with someone closely to see what could be added. You know, sometimes different flavorings or other powders or things like that where I've found I don't work as much in a clinical setting, but when I did, we definitely had a lot of different ways that we changed things around and found that people would start to eat them and even kids would start to kind of like the flavor of them. So, but it all depends on the own, you know, and particular medical concerns and what's appropriate with that. So I couldn't say anything specific, but that's what I would definitely recommend doing for your son because I wouldn't give up on it. I would say there may be ways by working closely with a dietitian you can switch things around and try some new things. So try that. Certainly with your 8-year-old daughter, I would kind of like we've talked about, you know, start just with really small amounts of things in terms of calories. An 8-year-old stomach is still not that large, and particularly if she's pretty small or, you know, low weight to begin with, it may be difficult for her to have very much at one time. But I would have her write down what are all the things she likes, what are all the things she will eat and things she likes, and then maybe take that list and see how you could build it up a little bit. So, you know, for example, if she does like peanut butter, well, that's something we could kind of squeeze in a little bit more because it's so calorically dense. Or if she would eat cheese, I wouldn't worry so much about the whole nutritional quality when you're not getting enough calories. I would just try to boost the calories because most kids, once they start eating more, kind of like we talked about a little bit ago, their appetite gets better once they start using more calories. So even if it's not very balanced to begin with, but she's eating more things that she likes, even a higher quantity of that, I think that can be helpful to start with. And then also just really be mindful of the liquids because she's going to need a good 6 to 8 cups of liquid a day at least. And if those could pretty much be things with calories, then that's a good way to kind of bump that up as well. So sometimes I find, this may not be the case with you, but sometimes I find parents are so worried about the nutrition that they don't necessarily their kids don't get enough juice or they don't get enough chocolate milk or things like that. And when the calories are low, one of the things we want to do is just get the calories up. And then once the calories are up, you can kind of balance out the diet a little bit better. So hopefully that'll help. And I think I run across people who will tell me they don't eat all day or they go for days and just forget to eat or it's not important to them or their body doesn't tell them naturally. One of my family members, a brother-in-law is like that, and he can go all day and doesn't seem to affect him. And I'll ask him. He said, "Well, you know, I don't think I ate today."
Whereas actually, in my case, I'm extremely hungry, but I just don't want to eat. I just want to look at food. I just don't want to eat it, and I am extremely hungry. And I don't forget. I just don't want to eat. I don't know what the problem is. Mm-hmm. It goes on every couple of months. I would go through that, and it could last a week. Sometimes the last year, it lasted like 6 to 8 months, and I lost like 80 pounds or something, you know, and that's not healthy. I know that, but
yeah.
I wouldn't want to eat anything. You know, maybe because I've been experiencing back pain a lot, and maybe that's the problem. Mm-hmm. I have no idea, but I go through phases where I wouldn't eat anything at all. I would order food, but I wouldn't eat it.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, it would be important to kind of get that checked out and see if there's any other medical, you know, reason for that. You know, hormones affect our ability to eat and our feeling about eating. And sometimes if those are out of whack, that can affect how you're, you know, feeling and wanting or not wanting to eat. What I really encourage people to do if it's very difficult for them to eat is at least to try to get some of these liquid meals in. And sometimes for some people that's easier than eating solid food. They could drink down, again, a Carnation Instant Breakfast or a shake of some sort or something like that, a boost or something, where they can get that down and they're done with it and they can move on. And it's easier for whatever reason than eating regular food. And so that would be something I would look at too. But I'd also make sure you have a complete evaluation, because there might be something else going on hormonally that you're just not really in control over. It sort of happens to your body and you don't want to eat. But it might be something that can be looked at and remedied medically too.
Okay, thank you so much for your time, okay?
Okay, thanks for the call this morning. Other calls are invited, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, toll-free 800-222-9455. And our email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. This is Focus on WILL Radio and online at will.illinois.edu. I'm Celeste Quinn. Susan Kundrat is with us this morning. She's a sports and wellness nutritionist, an adjunct lecturer with the University of Illinois Food Science and Human Nutrition Department. She's also the sports dietitian for Illini Athletics. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455, and will-talk@illinois.edu. Let's go back and talk about another element that might be important here, I suspect it is, and that's sleep.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting because more and more studies are documenting the importance of sleep, both for muscle gain and sleep for hunger. And we know that people who don't get enough sleep maybe tend to overeat a little mm-hmm. more often, and people who do get more sleep maybe to eat better according to their own body's regulations in terms of amounts and those kinds of things. And also when you are exercising, of course, your body generally needs good rest and needs time to repair tissue and those kinds of things. So a couple other things I see is I see a lot of clients, if they don't get enough sleep, then they get up and they're really not hungry, but they go heavily for the caffeine. And for a lot of people, if you drink much coffee, drink a lot of coffee, drink a lot of tea, for some people that lowers your appetite too. And so you may feel like, okay, I just got to get some coffee in because I'm so tired in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And they drink that but don't necessarily eat. So I think it's important to know that true energy, real energy for the body, comes from food itself. It doesn't come from caffeine. It doesn't come from a B6 supplement or anything like that. It comes from the actual food. And so if someone's tired, it's important for that person to say, well, I still need to eat. Maybe I still have my coffee, but I'm actually going to have a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, or I'm going to grab something quickly so I get some food in my system
mm-hmm.
so that I can actually start using the food. And that's what's going to give energy to the cells in the body and keep your blood sugar up and those kinds of things. And so even if someone's not sleeping well, it's important to eat well. And usually if you're eating well throughout the day and getting your activity, you're probably going to sleep better then the next night. So that kind of works to your advantage. Sometimes my athletes will laugh at the fact that I usually say, well, things really do come around to how you eat. I mean, everything is kind of based. If you're eating well, you exercise well. If you're eating well, you recover well. If you're eating well, you generally have good energy. You do better in classes. But if that's in place, everything else is easy. I mean, a lot easier on your body. But if you're missing meals, or if you don't get breakfast, or if you drink too much caffeine, or if, you know, these things are sort of your daily intake, everything else is harder. So you might as well give it up and just make your priority for a while nutrition, so you get used to getting in a good plan.
Become secondhand.
Right. And we see that. It's really interesting. I mean, a lot more freshman athletes who come right in right away and get on a plan. And this year, much more than last year, even much more than the year before. And I think part of it is, I think a lot more students come to school and they've already been exposed to a lot of nutrition education and understand how important that is. But I think maybe we're doing a better job educating them when they get here or something, but we're seeing a lot more athletes figure things out right away in terms of nutrition. And then again, everything's easier. It's really hard to do well all day in school, or for any kind of kid or any of us, if we don't have a good breakfast, to do well in our job, because we just don't have the energy. So prioritizing nutrition and taking those 5 or 10 minutes to get your day set and have breakfast doesn't take long, but it really helps.
Let's take another call. This is a listener in Farmer City, Line 4. Hi.
Yes, hi. Say, I was underweight for a long time. I went to see a Ayurvedic physician. That's an Indian doctor from India. He recommended a drink in the morning called a date shake. That's where you you take 4 or 5 dates in milk. You boil the milk and then put it in a blender, and you drink it, and it's a delicious, sweet shake in the morning. And I gained 20 to 30 pounds in, say, 5 or 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And I still drink it just because it tastes so good, and it seems to be highly nutritious. It has to be whole milk, not that runny 2%. And organic is better.
Yeah. Well, that's a great suggestion, because if you look at that, let's say if you look at you're getting organic milk, and when you're getting the whole milk, you're getting more of that fat. And the dates are a great concentrated source of a lot of nutrients, including carbohydrate, but iron and other things that are important. And so that mix also has good protein, has calcium, has a lot of things that are helpful. And it kind of goes into what we've been talking about, in that it's a liquid format. You make that into a shake. You need the fluids too. So you're generally going to feel better because you're getting those fluids in the morning. And perhaps that will help your appetite later in the day as well. But you're getting that going with 300, 400, 500 calories, depending upon how much you take in of that. And it's great. And like you're saying, if you're consistent, you know, over 5 or 6 months, let's say if you gain 20 to 30 pounds over that time period, maybe a couple pounds that you're gaining, you know, every week or two, that's great, because that's a consistent, slow way to do it, in a way that you're probably going to maintain it. So it's a great idea.
He also recommended, if you have a real strong digestion and you're again underweight and you're hungry in the afternoon, you could have a date shake then.
Mm-hmm.
Or even at bedtime, to have maybe half a glass, and it's very soothing for sleep.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing, you had a caller who said he wasn't hungry. Sometimes a good recommendation is to not sleep late, but get up early before 6 a.m. That seems to stimulate the digestion rather than sleeping late.
Yeah, good idea. I think that, like you're saying, if you wake the body up and get things going, get things moving, for a lot of people too, even if they get up early, like you're saying, and then do a few exercises, do a little activity where you start getting things going, and that affects the gastrointestinal tract too, to where you get things moving, it's a great option. So thank you for those.
Even eat breakfast, even if you're not hungry, just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Thanks for the call this morning. I remember a couple of years ago we had some things going on within the family and under a lot of stress. And, you know, you just have to kind of make yourself sit there and try and calmly have a bowl of cereal, something that's easy to go down. But, yeah, it can be kind of tough because you're so worked up.
Right. It's hard when you're nervous or anxious, or, you know, your body you don't feel like eating. You might feel nauseous and things. And that is a good point, because sometimes part of the reason we don't feel like eating is because we are too worked up, and taking that time, maybe getting away from the situation, mm-hmm. whatever it is. And we know we tend to digest food better if we take a few deep breaths before we eat, if we're in a relaxed atmosphere when we eat. That's all very helpful. So trying to kind of de-stress the minute or two before you eat.
Yeah. I would imagine that that's another issue that you work with, and others do with athletes, is that they've got to be, you know, calm, because mm-hmm. they're the big contest is
right.
ahead.
Right. It can be challenging to get enough in during the season for some athletes when they may feel like they can't eat before they compete, or they might get sick to their stomach, or for some athletes, we like them to eat within 30 minutes, or at least drink a recovery shake within uh-huh. 30 minutes of their workout. And for some athletes, they feel like that's too soon. They can't quite do it. And so when they're in heavy training periods of time, they need the most calories and more competition. Sometimes we see weight loss because of the nerves. And so yeah. we really try to work with. That's where a lot of these liquid meals can be really helpful, because sometimes those get digested relatively quickly. So maybe a couple hours before competition, they could take one of those in, whereas they would not eat a solid meal. And periodically we'll have athletes who they'll go to pregame meal, but they can't really eat that meal. So they've got to have a liquid plan in place that's going to be helpful to them.
What's the advice these days in terms of supplements? I know that, you know, some in particular kids, adolescents, they're really looking to, you know, put on some weight, put on some muscle. Mm-hmm. And so there's a temptation to go in that direction. And I imagine that there are some things you can do safely and there are some things that you should steer clear of.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are a few things we try to do first with athletes of young kids if they're trying to gain weight. There are some weight gainer products that are powdered products that you can add to milk or add to juice and things like that, or make a blend up for a milkshake that are really fine. They're more carbohydrates. They have extra protein added. They might have some fat added, but they really don't have any other supplements. Mm-hmm. And so those are okay, because sometimes you can mix that up with a couple cups of milk at night, and that can be 700, 800, 900 mm-hmm. calories. We use a lot of those with our athletes, and they're okay for young athletes too, because they don't really have the other supplements. The few that are out there that are hot supplements now that still we do not recommend for younger athletes under 18, 19 years old are things like creatine, which is still very, very popular. And there really are not studies on young athletes showing that it's either beneficial or safe. And even for our athletes who are college age or older, it may help some of them. But there will be those who are prone to cramping and pulls and strains and maybe some other things. Or if they've got some kidney issues we're not aware of or something like that, can be hard. So we have to be careful with that, even though there are some good studies showing it may be helpful with older athletes in strength training too. But creatine or a lot of popular supplements for young athletes right now include what you'd hear of as NO2 supplements, nitric oxide booster supplements, which are basically, most of them have the amino acid arginine in them. And the idea is it's going to dilate your blood vessels when you take them and the nutrients get there more quickly and things like that. It can also cause some problems with blood pressure, headache, those kinds of things. And it's really not studied in young kids anyway. I really don't recommend them for any age athlete, but to be really wary of those. And then the other thing I'd say to really be aware of is all these energy supplements. I had a presentation a couple weeks ago up in Michigan, and what I try to do when I'm going someplace is I try to stop at a gas station or somewhere right nearby. Mm-hmm. And just whatever's available, I pull two or three of those things. I buy them to show the audience, okay, just if you were going to stop outside of this presentation hall, this is what you could buy over the counter, and let's take a look at them. And so some of these things that are, I think I got something that was the 8-hour energy, and most of those are simply caffeine and some B vitamins. But there are a lot of pills that you can buy over the, just right in gas stations and places now too, that are 5-6 times the amount of caffeine in a cup of coffee. And a lot of young athletes go for those because they're after school grabbing something and maybe, you know, getting something to eat and grabbing that energy supplement to try to have more energy during practice. And so I'd really be wary of those, because a lot of those that you can buy are considerably problematic, and certainly the amount of caffeine and some other supplements that could lead you to the hospital because it's a large amount. So I'd say be wary of any additional particular supplement that's added, but the general weight gainer. Most of the high school kids I work with, we can whip up a shake that's milk and peanut butter and add a little chocolate to that and add a banana, and there's 800 calories in a shake, where that's the best way to do it. Do that a couple mm-hmm. times a day, and you can really boost weight.
What about just doing something as simple as adding powdered skim milk to beverages or soups or other liquids?
The powdered milk adds some calories. It's not a lot, but it adds a little bit. There's added protein, and you can certainly buy the 100% whey protein that's you can find anywhere, too, that's just protein. That would be a little more concentrated, but the powdered milk is good. I would say, too, one thing we really haven't talked about, but what I see sometimes aside from the younger folks or athletes, is just people who maybe lose weight because of problems with their teeth as they get older, inability to get enough protein, inability to get enough calories in because it's hard to chew things. And I think the shakes can be really helpful for for people if they're in that kind of situation, or just really easy proteins that are simple to make, not too expensive, because sometimes there's also budget issues. And that's where I would say really don't downplay the importance of eggs, because, again, even with high cholesterol, we say an egg a day is probably fine for most people. But that's a good way to get some of that fat in, and it's a good way to get some protein, things like cheese that are not real expensive, and even things like canned tuna, which is not very expensive, which is a good protein source and has some omega-3 fats, and bean soups and things like that, peanut butter, because there might be ways that a lot of older people might have, again, been told to watch these foods, but in their case, it can be really helpful as a way to get some calories and some protein and fat in that is easy and doesn't require a lot of preparation.
Yeah. This is Focus. We're talking this morning with licensed dietitian Susan Kundrot. Listeners, I invite you to join us this morning, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. The email address will-talk@illinois.edu. We've been talking this morning, interestingly enough, this is something we haven't done before too much, although it has come up, and that's why we're doing it this morning. Someone suggested, you know, hey, I don't have a problem losing weight. I have a problem keeping the pounds on. So we've been talking this morning about how you gain weight safely and with healthful foods. Of course, any other kind of question on diet and nutrition you may have, Susan would be happy to help you with that. 333-9455, 800-222-9455. The email address will-talk@illinois.edu. Let's take a call now from a listener in Sullivan on line 4. Hi.
Yeah, curiosity. How much coffee should a person drink a day?
Well, when we look at the amount of caffeine, it depends on how strong the coffee is, I guess would be one thing. We have kind of a general guideline for most people to say probably try not to get over about 300 milligrams of caffeine a day, which is a considerable amount. If you have, say, a 10 or 12 ounce cup of strong coffee, that could be close to 100 milligrams of caffeine. So if you had three of those 12 ounce coffees, that would put you at about 300 milligrams of caffeine right there. And so that's kind of a good guide as a general recommendation. Now, we do know that if people are used to taking in a lot of caffeine, they may be able to handle it better because their bodies are used to that. So if someone's drinking 8 a day, I wouldn't say go directly down to 3. I'd say go to maybe 6 and then 4 and then down to 3 so your body gets used to it. But caffeine is a stimulant. I mean, it really is a stimulant. It does affect the heart. It does affect the central nervous system. And so we know that in, you know, moderate amounts of maybe 2 or 3 a day for most people, they can handle it okay. But it does tax your body if you have much more than that. And so I tell people, you know, a couple cups of coffee a day or maybe a couple sources a day if they're bigger sources. Of course, a lot of our coffees are 20 ounce. They're not really 12 ounce.
Yeah, and then maybe you're having a caffeinated beverage for lunch.
Right. And so maybe keep it to
with
2 or 3 a day and try not to have more than that is a good recommendation.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Next we go to a listener in Mattoon, line 1. Hi.
Hi. I hope you haven't already discussed this. I was a little late in tuning in. But I wondered, there seems to be some discussion right now on multiple vitamins, especially for old people, and I qualify for that. Do you have any thoughts on that? They seem to feel that we're overdoing it.
I think there is a lot of discussion, as you mentioned right now, and perhaps some controversy on it.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I would say is that I believe, personally, as a dietitian, that for just about everybody, taking a multivitamin is a good idea. Now, the question then is figuring out one that works for your body. And you'll read things that you know, different multivitamins or the basic ones we hear about don't digest and it's a waste of money. And I don't really think that's the case. Most multivitamins either have NSF approved on them, which means that they've been checked out for digestion and absorption, or USP, which means that they, again, have been checked out. And so those would be two things you'd want to look for. And I think 100% multivitamin is helpful. And women generally need iron before menopause. Generally, they don't after. Men usually don't need iron, so those would be iron-free. But what we do know is that certain vitamins and minerals become a little bit less well absorbed as we get older. And one of those in particular is B12.
Mm-hmm.
And so for anybody over 50, they should definitely be on a multivitamin that contains 100% B12, just because we just do not get, we don't use it as well from food as we get older.
Mm-hmm.
So we know that's a case for sure. We know most people are probably low in vitamin D, particularly living in the climate we live in. And so generally a multi would have D in it.
What about folic acid?
Folic acid is one that has gained a little bit more concern just because so many foods are fortified with folic acid now.
Mm-hmm.
And so we don't want too much of that, but usually a multivitamin would just have 100% of folic acid. And that's probably reasonable for most people unless they've been found to have a problem with being too high in folic acid. So, one of the things I've noticed lately, a trend in multivitamins, is that there's been so much concern over bone health and calcium and vitamin D that a lot of multivitamins have upped their calcium. And for someone who's my age, for example, where I still need iron, I want a multivitamin with iron, but I really don't want too much calcium in my multivitamin because iron and calcium compete for binding. And so if you have too much of both of those, you might not absorb as much of either one of them. And so I'm looking, I look for multivitamins that don't have much calcium. I'd rather take that separately if I need it, but get the iron as 100%. But I think from a marketing standpoint, companies are adding calcium because mm-hmm. people are interested in calcium.
Is it D that helps absorption of that?
Yes, D helps absorption of calcium. And while we're on the question of D, now that vitamin D levels have been linked to so many things that we really want optimal vitamin D levels, I encourage people, if they have not gotten their vitamin D levels checked, to ask the next time they go to their physician to please have that checked, because more and more people are low, and if they're low, that does increase your risk of certain problems.
And that includes people that are 102, like me.
Yes, well, you need to tell us what you're doing.
Yeah, you sound great.
No, I'm kidding. I'm not too far off.
but yes, D levels are, important for all of us for a myriad of reasons. But I do think taking a 100% multivitamin, there are other ones that are great that are over 100%, but then we just want to make sure it's something that we really need. For some people, they might benefit from more B's or more C or things.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for your comments. I enjoy the program. Thank you.
Thanks for the call this morning. Nice to talk with you. This is Focus on WILL Radio and online at will.illinois.edu. Questions about diet and nutrition are invited this morning. 333-9455-800-222-9455. The email address, will-talk@illinois.edu. Excuse me. We've got about 3 minutes left in this portion of the program. So one of the things that I've noticed is, my multivitamin over time seems to get bigger in size.
Mm-hmm. Well, part of that, I think, is because of the
more stuff in there. But did they have to make them so big?
Well, I think part of that is the increase in minerals, because the minerals are bigger. And so when you add calcium, for example, to a multivitamin, that mm-hmm. I think that I'm not an expert in the vitamin industry, but it seems to me that those with more calcium tend to be bigger. And, of course, a calcium, if you just take it as a supplement, is pretty big.
That's true.
So I think that's a lot of what's happening, is the minerals have increased, and that has to increase the size of the multivitamin. So that's probably what you're finding.
Yeah. Boy, I feel like maybe I should cut them in half. They're so
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
so large. And
that's where to check to make sure you need all those things,
Yeah.
One thing I did put together just real quickly is for people who say, well, how many more calories do I need if I'm trying to gain weight? And a good idea is to try to get 400 or 500 more calories a day. And if you're trying to gain, that's a good start, because that equals close, let's say, to maybe 2, 3, 4 pounds a month, depending upon how well your body uses the calories. So let's say, for example, if someone just said, well, concretely, what should I do? I would maybe give recommendations to add 3 things during the day. One would be a cup of 100% juice, particularly things like grape, 100% Concord, which is good for your arteries anyway. 1 cup of grape juice. If you had 2 tablespoons of peanut butter or some type of nut butter, and you added 1 egg a day.
That's all?
That would give you about 400 calories right there. And if you could add a little more olive oil or regular dressing or something like that, then that would maybe bump it to 500. So it's really not that much food if you're using these compact foods that are high in the good fats and also high in protein.
Okay. And then that's also something to think about for those of us who don't need to gain weight.
That's right.
To watch how easy it can be.
Yeah, spread that peanut butter thinly if we're not. And we do have the handout, too, that people could.
That's right. And actually, I have a handout as well that I found that I thought was nice, too, from McKinley. But Susan brought a couple of brought a handout this morning with her when she came in. And then I found one that was nice from Illinois McKinley Health Center here at the university. And so if you'd like those two things, just drop us a line, send us a self-addressed stamped envelope. It's Focus, WILL, 300 North Goodwin Avenue, 61801. 300 North Goodwin Avenue, Urbana, Illinois, 61801. And apologies now to, we've got a couple of calls. They came in just now, too late. But Susan will be back next month. Mm-hmm. And so we will talk with her again in the near future. And my thanks this morning to those folks who called in and, of course, to Susan Kundrat of Nutrition on the Move.